All right. Welcome
back. A third
back.
All right.
That would have been a quote by the great Matthew McConaughey, but that's not what we're here for, you know. We're here for some F1 talk today.
We're here on the gravel.
That's a great way of putting it. Oh, boy.
Post-Suzuka,
great race. Lots happened during this fortunate week of F1. So let's dive right into it. First off, some of the biggest news that we had right out of the week was F1 obtaining 86% of
MotoGP
rights, which costed a whopping $4.2 billion to acquire. And we've kind of talked about it a little bit before.
I was going to say, we thought it was going to happen. Like it was kind of like
when that news came out that theory. There was a bidding war for it. We talked about our thoughts, and we can kind of go over some of that because that was a while ago. But
absolutely.
Yeah, Dorna is retaining 14% of the company. That's the parent company of MotoGP right now, while Liberty Media, the ownerships of F1, is buying 86%. That deal would go into effect at the end of the 2024 season with all MP1, MGP2, MGP3, MotoE, Superbike, WC would all not be affected this year and would just essentially...
Dorna would just keep that.
Yes, Dorna would keep those for this year, and then next year it will all go under Liberty Media, which... meh, in my opinion. But Dorna CEO Carmelo Ezpeleta would remain the one in charge, which is actually pretty interesting.
It's also important.
Yeah, I think that's really big in kind of taking this away from Dorna and then keeping him in charge just because he knows what to do. So you don't have to acquire someone who has to go through a trial period and all that. Greg Maffei, Liberty Media president and CEO, was quoted saying that Carmelo and his management team have built a great sporting spectacle that we can expand to a wider global audience. The business has significant upside, and we intend to grow the sport for MotoGP fans, teams, commercial partners, and our shareholders.
Now, I don't want to see some Drive to Survive MotoGP edition, but
it's going to happen.
I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
I mean, going into this, kind of what Greg was saying is BS in itself, just because, you know, they intend to grow the sport. It's already the second most watched motor discretion in the world. Planet. So I don't know, like, yeah, you're going to bring it to a global audience, and the fact that you are the owner of F1 and now have that power to kind of take this smaller company into your wing, but like, at the same time, what level is going to invalidate that? What level is going to make this
worthwhile.
A sideshow almost compared to what F1 is? Because like,
I was wondering like how that's going to work when it comes to like maybe supporting series for an F1 race weekend. Do they now have MotoGP race on F1 tracks, like that kind of thing? I don't personally know how that would go into effect, but I was going to say, how do you also keep them separate? I mean, you're now in charge of the two biggest racing discretions by viewership on the planet. I feel like it's going to clash at some point.
Yeah. I mean, they were supposed to be a race this morning, but that was canceled. We'll talk about that later in the episode. But I don't know. I mean, as a team, I feel like this is good for you because you are going to get more viewership. You're going to get more sponsor time. It's going to be more worth your money. But is that going to draw in teams that F1 had trouble in the past where they're just kind of money grab teams, and why they're not wanting to accept Audi right now or
Andretti?
Thank you. Just because they're fearing that it's a money bid and
it's going to threaten the integrity of the sport as a whole. Which I don't want to get into that again because that's not what this is about. But I don't know. I just want to see what they do with it, I guess, from a media perspective and promotionally, how they intend to grow MotoGP. Because, like I said, like if it's another like Drive to Survive for MotoGP, like I'm going to be pissed.
Oh no, we'll see what happens. I think the first year will really show how they are going to take their stance on it. I don't think after that they'll really change it. But my thing is, like, how are you, like you said, how are you scheduling this with the F1 season? Like, right now, like, next week, they're going to be racing at COTA. And, you know, F1's not there until October. So, do you have it, like, as a reverse? Do you have it, like, offset by five races where, you know, maybe they start at China, they end at Japan type thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It'll be interesting to see. But
it's something we kind of just have to sit back and watch.
Yeah. Switching back to some F1 news, which is why you guys are here. After the Japanese GP, Pirelli tire testing will happen on the 9th and 10th of April with Stake and V-Carb to develop compounds for next year, which is strange because Stake can't put tires on their car normally. So how are they going to do it during testing?
Well, we're not even going to see it anyways. So they get to hide this one behind closed doors, and we'll see. I mean, I am excited for new types of compounds of tires. Like, specifically, like, my biggest pet peeve in F1 is the fact that the wet tires don't even get used anymore because they're just like, oh, we'll red flag the race, that kind of thing. So is it going to be like another thing where, you know, recently they added the C0 tire compound, which is the hardest one in the Pirelli range? Do they add like now like a C6, something like that?
The softest.
And I this is why I say they just need to go back to the color wheel, but that's neither here nor there. It'll come back
hopefully one day, but we cannot guarantee that. Oliver and I got by April Fools, like a lot of people did, and I think...
Dude, this was a very official-looking post. Do not come at me. Do not mess with me, bro. I was freaking out.
It was really good, but we got. Adrian Newey is not signing to Ferrari, which we had on the document as like big news, but that's not happening. But sticking with Adrian Newey, it did come out and say... Mike Crack said that they didn't put a big offer on Adrian Newey and denied the rumors. But then it came out that Lawrence Stroll said that he donated $100 million over 4 years was the contract that they offered Newey, which that's $25 million a year.
More than like anybody besides Max, Lewis, and like Charles.
It's pretty good money, can't complain. But hopefully hopefully, it still could happen.
Lance Stroll, bro. That's a pretty good offer.
I don't know. It could still happen, though. So we're not taking that out of the question. Another big point, which I know you were a little bit more excited about just because you got to watch him race.
Oh, yeah.
Seb Sebastian Vettel is returning to racing. It's not F1, but it's racing, which is a step in the right direction. After his testing with Porsche Penske was successful, he decided that he wanted to race for the team in the 24-hour of Le Mans. In his debut in the Porsche 963 Hypercar, which is beautiful.
Dude, also just seeing former current F1 drivers in WEC is also a beautiful thing. It's another discretion of racing that Seb kind of gets to go into and try and dominate. If Sebastian Vettel wins the 24 Hours of Le Mans this year, dude, I'm done. Like, that would actually be insane. And Seb has also, like, as of recent, kind of hinted to coming back to F1.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think it's out of his mind that he's retired.
Like, I feel like recently he's said that, like, there's potential. Like, if the right deal, right project is there, I could come back. But
I could see him coming to, like if Andretti got in, like,
yeah,
they get him as, like, a just kind of experienced driver just to
like
have.
A mentor.
Yeah. Mentor, but also as like just see like how can we improve the car, like, you know, not more so as like a you're going to be winning races, but like how do we compete, and like you're going to be a part of that, kind of like how Niki Lauda was at the end of his career type thing.
Yeah. Or somebody like Valtteri Bottas is right now, like he is super like in there when it comes to just giving feedback on the car and that kind of stuff. So I'd be fine seeing Seb do something like that. I don't have to see him come back and win another championship if I just see him on a track again, I'm a happy man.
It's gonna be a pretty cool feeling. I also feel like, sticking with Seb for a second, I feel like they didn't highlight the B corner at Suzuka as much as they did last year.
Yeah.
You know, like there wasn't really much of that at all besides the media day on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think it's still there from what I know, but
I believe so.
I don't know.
But I wasn't really looking for it.
I feel
it,
like
though,
it was pretty weird. McLaren engineer David Sanchez left the team after only 3 months of working with them, which is shocking if it's a very high-level engineer like David Sanchez. Apparently, he was quoted with saying that the role that they envisioned and had agreed upon was not aligned with the reality of the position I had found. How do you fumble this if you are McLaren? Because it's not that hard to say your job is one thing and then making your job that one thing.
Like, it's a shapeshifter, now it's this. But yeah, it definitely... Losing key engineers is not a good thing. We've seen how it is with Mercedes. And I don't want to see McLaren like have some major fall off after they've been recovering for literally the past decade. McLaren is in its best position that it has been in since literally the 2013 season.
Since Lewis was still driving for them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd say arguably their car last year was better than this year's, but they're still working in that direction of, you know, maybe nailing the 2026 regulations and being a championship contender again.
Yeah. How does this really affect McLaren being the third best car right now? Like,
yeah,
that's my thing. Is I feel like the engineers now are going to have to take more risks in a way just to kind of off-put the loss of a key engineer like that.
Yeah.
But I'll let you take this point.
This one's super cool and gets you kind of hyped for the driver market. Kimi Antonelli, obviously notable F2 driver in his first season this year, Mercedes Junior, driving in a Prema. He will be doing a two-day test in the W13 with Mercedes on the 16th and 17th of April. And Raven had a really nice point about this. You know, it's the same kind of thing that they did with Daniel Ricciardo last year. They're kind of testing out potential replacements in that car that they're looking to fill the seat of. So them doing a test with, like, Kimi Antonelli instead of somebody like, say, Fred Vesti or something, you know, that definitely reinforces the fact that Mercedes are genuinely serious about potentially putting Kimi in the car next year. And having another Kimi on the grid would be very, very nice. But... yeah, they're full in when it comes to pushing this kid into F1, just like Williams were with Logan Sargeant last year. So I'm excited to see the times he produces. I think it'll be the 2-year-old car now. So
yeah, it's the
he'll be driving the 2022 W13. Mercedes, mm-hmm. Which
so
is
a good
this
car.
Is also really good, just in the sense that they're now, because the rule with in season testing with old equipment is it has to be at least 2 seasons old. So like when they were testing last year, they were using 2021 cars. And now that we're into the 2024 season, the third year of the regulations, these in-season tests are used with cars that actually fit the regulations.
So it's actually relatively what they're going to be racing in the future if they join next year.
Yeah. Testing in the 2021 Red Bull, is not going to help you as much as testing in the 2022 Red Bull will be. For somebody like, let's say, Liam Lawson or Yuki Tsunoda or Yuma Wasa, like, yeah, it's definitely super important. So I'm super excited to see how he does. And the more experience you get in an F1 car, like, you're getting prepped. You're ready. He's going to be scary.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
I saw a really stupid post by a decent source most of the time. I'm not going to shame them, but... they reported that F1insider.com reports that 90% of Mercedes employees want Max Verstappen as a driver in 2025. Yeah, everyone wants him as a driver in 2025. That's a stupid stat. That's like me saying, oh, I want Nikola Jokic to come to the Bucks because we might win more. Yeah, obviously he's the best player in the league.
Guys, we don't want Nikita Mazepin in our car next year. We put out a survey. just wondering, we threw out the idea, do we want Nikita in the car next year?
It was between him and Nicholas Latifi, and it was just all Epstein's. It was crazy.
How can we expect such a result?
It's just, I hate these stats. I hate these, like, commentators that also do the same thing where it's, like, just all theory, all just, like, common knowledge that
it seems like useless information to fill a void.
Yeah.
Like,
we
don't have any shocking news for today. Let's put out some absolute facts. This is heat, guys. People will love this.
It's so true, though. And it's just frustrating. But to counter that point, everyone does want him because out of the last 69 races, 46 of them he has won, marking it at exactly 66.666%. But that was before he won Japan, so now we can say it's 47 of the last 70, and that number doesn't look as pretty anymore. But that's how it is.
Yeah, and how could you not want that, dude?
That's just how it is. But if you feel like it's boring watching Max win, I mean, you can kind of attest to this a lot more than I can.
Watching Lewis win
every
single week, bro.
Or what was the joke? Ham-bot.
Ham-ver-bot. Yeah. Or ham-bot-ver, and now it's ver-per-sai.
Yeah, it's just how it is. And I mean,
dude, at least make it ver-per-Leclerc, bro. Put Leclerc in there,
your
baby.
Dreams. In your dreams. He almost had it yesterday, but not good enough. It was reported a few days ago that Williams had not been a good environment since the Albon FP1 crash last week at Australia. Williams isn't going to have a spare chassis until May in Miami, which is not good.
No China. No spare chassis for China.
Which, after Alex's crash during the race, means both cars are now broken, repaired chassis that are going to be racing. So,
thankfully, they have that 1 week break, or I guess 2 week break, until China. But it's just so funny because you're giving Alex Albon Logan's chassis, and that was the chassis that he was using in Japan, and then he threw it into the wall just like he did with his in Australia. And it, like, oh man, dude, it just, then you have Logan Sargeant using a repaired chassis, so then he crashes in FP1, like, I don't know what's going on with Williams right now. Like,
yeah.
I didn't expect this, dude.
I mean, the drivers haven't been talking. James Vowles, like, and those all relations have kind of been soured by this.
But I also feel like this is, like, the last thing you expect from James Vowles.
Yeah.
To me, at least. I don't know. I feel like he's better than this.
Yeah.
Like, we'll go back to Australia. Logan should have raced. Like I feel like this entire scenario
stems from absolutely
that crazy decision we had 2 weeks ago. But
I don't know. I mean,
we'll see if they bounce back. I don't know.
It's hard. It sucks. They're going to be at the bottom for the next few races because of this. And
I was going to say, Alex literally destroyed the upgrade package that they put on that chassis as well. So now they have to repair that package. Logan wasn't even racing with it anyways because they only had one
upgraded
set
chassis
of
yeah.
that. Yeah, upgraded chassis. So like it's like they're starting from the ground again.
It's bad. They're going to be struggling, and we wish them the best. Thursday was media day, which led to some good, funny moments. You had Nico Hülkenberg kind of talking down Oliver Bearman.
Yeah, bro,
I don't know.
That had me so pissed. Like, dude, I love Nico Hülkenberg too, but like that was so uncalled for. He was essentially being like, "Oh yeah, of course." Like Oliver Bearman, you know, finished P7, like did better because he's in a better car, dude. It's not that impressive. Well, like,
but then
of
the
course,
thing that
that's true with, to a like a point.
Yeah, yeah.
But what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say he countered with it took him like 5 laps to get around me. If it should have been like 2 if he was in such a better car and was all this prodigy driver. It's like,
this
okay.
is also his first race ever.
Yeah, and didn't he just get penalized for weaving?
They talk. Yeah, he was getting in trouble for weaving.
So not one to talk, are you, Nico? So,
suck my balls, mate. If you remember that Kevin Magnussen moment from Hungary 2017, bro. Oh my God, I love that.
That's good. You also had Lando kind of coming to Alonso's defense, which kind of shocking seeing that. I mean, it was kind of reported that most of the grid was really split on the issue. I mean, a lot of them were feeling for George, but also understanding that
it's Alonso's guiding this train of himself and George, and he gets to dictate, you know, the pace through the corners, all that kind of stuff. So I'm with Lando, like I said 2 weeks ago. But it's nice to see that people are actually coming and defending this man who's done so much for this sport.
Absolutely. Continuing on, we got some upgrades. We'll talk more about those a little bit later after, just so we can kind of gauge where those upgrades really helped and kind of failed.
Yeah.
But we had one repair as well, which didn't go well. At the beginning of the season, there were talks of Red Bull potentially having a zero pod concept that Mercedes attempted last year, but obviously they did not do that. But they did change a lot of intakes on their car, which is one of the things that I think helped them because of the, you know, just brake cooling and tire degradation of Australia.
Yeah.
That was their main issues. So introduce a few more.
It kind of sucks that they're not going to do that zero side pod design anymore, but I completely understand. There's no reason to jeopardize your season over such a big change like that. Or maybe it's something that gets delayed until further in the season this year where they have a lot more breathing room.
When Max is up by 300 points, throw it on his car and see what happens, you know?
True.
But sending a little love and appreciation to all the Japanese F1 fans, you know.
Dude, we were talking about this while we were watching the race yesterday.
It looks so fun.
Some of the most creative people that I've seen. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched the Japanese GP before and like really, you know, looked into the stands. You don't see it at any other race. Like, these people have some of the craziest like hats on. Like,
oh my God, you know, you saw the hats. Verstappen, like, 17-piece mosaic hat was.
You had the one of like the Mercedes steering wheel. Yeah. You had the one of the hat with like the Ferrari front wing on it. Like, it was all so cool. And then just like you were talking about, like all of those
the
big
signs.
Pieces. Yeah, the signs were
so
nice.
Great. You had the, you know, the young kids being like, sorry, I'm missing school, but Ferrari's my excuse, which bad excuse.
Not
but,
a good
you know,
excuse.
But
just say it's Max Verstappen.
Just,
dude.
Yeah. Just say it's Max and Red Bull and everyone understands then. But
hey, the teacher respects the loyalty of being a Ferrari fan.
You're not graded on loyalty, bud.
Okay.
Another cute one
points
was...
Points are given on a Sunday. Get out of here.
Another cute one was the Alonso fans, where they were like, make sure this gets to Alonso, and then him opening it on his Instagram stories was very, very cute. I don't know if you also saw the Gunter Steiner video of him like working Instagram for the first time and learning how to... Take someone else's story and putting it onto his. Oh, brother, it's hard watch.
Dude,
it's
that's
a hard
like,
watch.
That's like seeing like those like random dads who will start using TikTok for the first time, and they'll post like a random video, and it's just like the word "the," and it's like a still image of their face, and somehow this gets on my For You page and blows up. That's it. Like, that's exactly what I imagined Gunther doing.
That's really funny. We'll go over to the actual race. So let's get into that. I'll let you take away some of the practice points.
I was going to say, I stayed up Thursday night. I stayed up Friday night watching practice. There wasn't like so much excitement that happened throughout practice. But like we mentioned earlier, the whole stuff with the Williams chassis issue, given Logan was using Alex's old chassis, it was a bit more unstable. He had like a pretty sucky crash at the end of the S's where he went a little bit too wide in the last corner, kind of caught the grass and the gravel, and it threw the car into the side of the wall, and it destroyed that chassis. He had to miss FP2 for it, and obviously it just messed up his entire weekend. But then you had FP2, which got rained out essentially. That one I missed because it was so late. I mean, I think it was like 3 in the morning at that point.
We're tapping out at that point.
But they, when I came on and, you know, looked at the timesheets in the morning, I saw that only, I think, 7 or 8 drivers went out on track and ran maybe 3 or 4 laps. I knew it had rained, but apparently it was one of those weird scenarios where it's wet enough to not be able to use the soft tires, but dry enough where the inters are just going to grind shred and up. Shred. Yeah. So I think they had like maybe 5 or 6 minutes of actual dry running, and then they all just sat in the garage for an hour. So FP2 didn't exist anyway. So Logan Sargeant actually kind of lucked out there, given nobody else was really getting on track times. That's why, you know, it kind of ruined my excitement when I saw that Oscar Piastri was also on the top of the timesheets for FP2. I was like, holy crap, the McLarens are actually there. But that was just, it was not, competitive timing whatsoever. And then obviously FP3, the next day you have a Red Bull 1-2. So we're right back to reality there. And then we'll end up going into qualifying as well. But I know you had a point on Aston Martin that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, they were running different setups all weekend long. And that was kind of apparent with through practice with the qualifying times that they had. You know, I think obviously giving Fernando more race pace is better in that situation.
And I was going to say they gave Fernando a car that was a bit faster on the straights, and they gave Lance Stroll a higher downforce car, so he was much quicker when it came to cornering. But there is like probably my favorite moment of the weekend, and we'll talk about it in a minute, is just this Lance Stroll voice message that came on about halfway through the race that we could not stop laughing at. But it's 2-3 minutes on that guy before we get to him.
So good. You know, sticking with the Aston Martins, you had Lance qualifying in 16th and Alonso in 5th, which really shows the setup differences that they really had.
And the driver differences.
I was going to say, also just the experience between the two drivers driving a same car.
Dude, it's also so difficult using the term experience with Lance Stroll, because he debuted in a Williams in 2017. Like, let that sink in. Do not go walk over to the door and let this sink in. But
call back to like 2nd or 3rd episode. Right,
yeah. Like, this is his 9th season in the sport. It's Max Verstappen's 10th season in the, or 11th, I'm sorry, 11th season in the sport. It's crazy to use like unexperienced in a
rookie driver beats you, bud.
Yeah, you have rookie Alonso just absolutely clapping Lance Stroll in his 9th season.
Both V-carbs looked much better in race pace and in quality pace, qualifying in 10th and 11th, respectfully. And then I'll let you take that last one.
Yeah, this really had me going last night, or 2 nights ago now. The Ferraris were absolutely woeful, disgusting in qualifying trim. And it's so difficult when my like main excitement period of the weekend is qualifying, because I know that's where Ferrari can actually top the timesheets. Like, seeing Leclerc, one, he did a completely alternative strategy when it came to his running in Q3. He didn't go with the pack. He kind of let them all do their first runs while he sat in the garage. They all go back to the garage, and then Leclerc comes out on an open track.
Open air, clean air.
I was going to say, and then sticks at P8, and that's where he sat for the rest of qualifying. Carlos Sainz was only able to qualify P4 with Lando Norris topping him in P3. So it was a very difficult qualifying session to be a Ferrari fan. But it was kind of a reverse, because when it came to race pace, they actually looked a lot better. Max Verstappen obviously stole pole position by a large margin. It was looking pretty close in the first set of runs. I mean, you had Alonso qualifying Q1, you had Alonso like splitting the Red Bulls. Mm-hmm. And I got really hyped that up and excited sick. And confused there. But it obviously wasn't to be. It was a Red Bull 1-2 in qualifying. And you know, that's the end of the podcast, guys. You already know where it goes from here. So like and subscribe. No, I'm kidding. I'll let you take the race away, though.
Yeah. Holy first lap action. That was similar to last year's Australian Grand Prix kind of opening. You know, clean through the first corner. Afterwards, once that track kind of tightens up a little bit,
you had
Lance Stroll swinging a little wide, and Danny looking to his left, worrying about him, kind of cuts in, cutting off Albon on his outside line.
Who is already going for an overtake on Ricardo at this point. But
he's already on the grass.
Exactly. That's where I was like, why is Alex there? But, you know, when you see it from like Kevin Magnussen's POV on the onboard, Danny kind of does just like cut fully across the track. I believe it's a racing incident, what that was. But it was definitely a rash movement from Daniel Ricciardo, and it doesn't look good for him, dude. Like, that is not what he needs happening right now.
He had a really good start compared to Yuki and, you know, some of the other people around him. But
yeah, and then once they started getting into those corners, though, he started getting squeezed out and then forced back.
He had a really good, like, safe defending play to pull out of that first corner a little bit.
Yeah.
Letting Yuki squeeze by in corner one. But after that, it's just racing incident. And, you know, we had a few great moments as a result of this. You had Liam Lawson
kind of staring over his shoulder,
watching Daniel's back, literally.
Very aggressively.
Yeah, the cameraman this weekend knew what they were doing. There were some cinematic shots.
Dude.
The reflection of Nico Horner, or Christian Horner. Wow, it's a little.
Oh yeah,
late
like
for
yeah,
us.
When they like panned into the garage on him as well, and then you had like the most notable one, which was when they red flagged it, obviously, so they could repair the tire barriers, and you had the Aramco sponsorship that got like shredded.
Ram. But
there was literally one portion of the Aramco board that was actually still intact, and it just said Ram, and they just stuck that right in the middle of the tire.
That's good enough. That's good enough. No one's gonna hit this again.
And then you had like the 20 Kia trucks on this on the side of the track as well.
I made the comment that every single one of those trucks was picking up a different piece of debris, and that's how they, you know, like, safely manage everything, which I don't know. I thought that was funny, but after that,
the second restart was very clean.
Yes, second restart was very clean. Besides the Albon,
Alpines
throwing it into each other and tapping each other a little bit.
Both came over the radio pretty furious at each other for that one.
Apparently, Pierre Gasly did have a little floor damage from that. I don't know how you get floor damage from a tap on the side, but. On an Alpine, anything's possible.
Well, it's probably, I mean, it's probably just a bit of damage to the barge board.
No, I imagine it's just like the floor's like structure kind of got wanky, and that just throws up all the airflow. So,
but at the same time, that cost him like almost insignificant time.
Yeah.
So it's nothing like to really worry about.
They need to make Japan in April all the time because the cherry blossoms were great.
Yeah, dude, you never get to see those when we race in October. The amount of like just cinematic shots we got of Suzuka with a cherry blossom tree in front.
Did you see what Yuki said? Where he's like, I don't get to come to Japan in April that much, so I never get to see them. So like seeing this
it's
really
just so wholesome.
Sweet. Yeah, it's just like if that's something like you look for every year. I mean, I feel like to
but
some
it's,
degree.
It's also just reminds him of home so much. Like that's
absolutely.
A very.
that was so bad.
We totally both just cut each other's thoughts off there.
Oh, brother, that doesn't make sense for the audio listeners. But if you watch it, you will just look at us.
We both
like,
kind of just sat here like full straight on.
Okay, moving on. From that last point, that was so well said by both of us.
Once we actually got to racing.
Yeah, now we're continuing racing.
I was very surprised about the race pace of the Ferraris, McLarens, and Fernando Alonso's. it was very interesting. Like, after the first set of pit stops, you actually had Lando Norris come out of the pits ahead of Sergio Perez. And I don't think they even showed Sergio re-overtaking Lando.
Yeah, we were talking about that, and I don't remember it happening. And I don't.
And I know Sergio had pitted at that point.
Yeah.
Like, Lando Norris undercut, and by the way, the undercut was so unbelievably strong at Suzuka this weekend. But Lando had undercut Sergio.
Do you want to explain what undercutting is for those who don't know?
Yeah, so undercutting is the idea of boxing. Let's say you're, okay, let's put out a 50-lap race. It's a medium to hard race, and your mediums are going to be finished on lap 19. So your pit time is lap 19. If you're in a fight with another car for track position and you guys are both on that same strategy, you can say, okay, let's box on lap 17, put on fresher tires now so I can have some very strong outlaps so that when the other car boxes, by the way, this car is in front of you. When the other car boxes, they will come out of the pits behind you. I've never seen, personally, the undercut be so strong. Like, you had drivers making up multiple seconds of time by boxing literally one or maybe two laps early.
Or losing time in that matter. Like, they said if Charles ended up doing a two-box strategy, he would have probably came in, like, P7, P8.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what it, like, I feel like tire deg was way more manageable here this week. Like, I was so surprised that Charles was able to throw 27 laps, which is literally half the race, on his medium tires. It was like the only reason he was able to carve through the field. He got driver of the day for it. But yeah, 27 laps on the medium tires there was unbelievable when you had drivers doing two-stop strategies running two stints on the hard tires. And, you know, they were struggling. So I think Charles was super, super underrated this weekend, being able to come back from that horrible qualifying that him and Ferrari had to stick at P4.
He even was quoted being like, I'm not someone who has to worry about qualifying pace most of the time. And this weekend was kind of like a reality check for me, where it's like, we've had something right for 3 years, but one tiny action can really switch that up, and you just always have to be on your toes. And he did a really good job of kind of making the most out of what he had, so good for him.
I was gonna say, Charles is always a good driver when it comes to the race, but you know where he really shines is qualifying. So him having a bad qualifying can really destroy a race weekend for him. But I mean, he showed to me, he showed why he is the number one driver at Ferrari. The dude is killer, man.
Yeah, I mean, going to the next point, there was no huge gaps in between the grid, mainly. I mean,
yeah, I was going to say, besides Max, so you had Max finishing
12 and a half seconds.
Perez was 12 and a half seconds behind. And then you had Carlos only 8 seconds behind Sergio Perez. You had Charles 6 seconds behind Carlos. And then you had Lando 3 seconds behind Charles. You know, when you think about that in the context, let's say, you know, with Sergio and Carlos, if you think about about 8 second gap in the context of a 53 lap race, Perez is only 2/10 a lap faster than Carlos.
Yeah. And shout out Perez real quick, because he did have a strong rebound after some major floor damage in Australia, which is why he didn't have that great of race pace last weekend. So
yeah, I think Perez did a good job. You can't really talk bad on him this week.
No, he did fundamentally what Red Bull is asking him to do, which is get second behind Max. So in their standards, he will be driving there next year. So I don't know. I mean, like you said, there was no huge gaps. You had Oscar and Russell fighting it out.
Oscar, Russell, and Fernando.
Yeah,
and Fernando.
In the very last lap. So, and then even behind them, it was...
The very back of the pack was also super entertaining for the entire race. Like the Salvers, the Williams,
stop.
Haas.
The five-man
pit
stop.
That was so random. They, like, you know, obviously you see five people boxing on the same lap all the time, but like five cars that are all a second apart from each other boxing at the same time was so cool.
That was really strange. Yuki kind of got the lucky end of that stick because he was first in, last in, first out. So can't complain about that.
And but also scores points at home. I'm so happy for him.
Shout out him for that. That's definitely a top moment for us. But let's go to the upgrades packages real quick. I had a cool article by The Race pulled up. I'm going to switch over the camera for you guys, too, that you guys can see. And then we should be able in the bottom left corner now. What up, guys? So shout out The Race for being here. You got Red Bull showing off their new features over here, old ones over here. some new inlets and side pod manifolds on the right. And then little side view action. They got rid of these vents that were right above the Red Bull and now kind of have another opening near the Oracle, right next to this.
Right next to the driver's head, yeah.
Ferrari, you know, they were kind of predicting rain, so they had a lot of rain upgrades for them. But, yeah, I mean, those were like some of the main huge upgrades. But after that, you had McLaren with just some small aerodynamic front brake stuff. Aston Martin was kind of another one of those teams that had a bigger upgrade package for Alonso, not really for Stroll. But a lot of floor bot and like body work as well as geometry, which I imagine is important.
Yeah, and then there was a new diffuser to pair with it. Just get greater expansion.
Alpine brought some major upgrades. They had a lot of, it was a front new wing and bunch of new parts that are lighter weight. Because that was an issue for them at the start of the year, and it still is an
issue.
That's
why their car's black.
Williams, obviously, they're, I mean, can you even call it an upgrade after what happened to them?
Yeah.
But you had Racing Bulls with a new floor body and floor edge to just increase downforce. Sauber had a new floor edge and floor body as well as some new inlets to improve aerodynamic stability. So shout out Mark Hughes at the race. Thank you for that sick article and making my life a little bit easier and not having to type as much on our document. So
I was going to say, and then with no upgrades for Mercedes and Haas, you have Haas actually bringing a major upgrade package for China, and then Mercedes with their, you know, underlying issues that they're kind of just trying to fix, barely breaking into Q3 each week.
Yeah,
so
struggling.
They'll have some big upgrade package at some point, but to not have heard about it yet is a bit worrisome.
Before we go, I'm going to search up exactly what Lance Stroll said on the...
You need to literally just play the clip. So it was like halfway through the race, and he was obviously with his higher downforce setup, struggling with speed on the straights. And what was so funny about it was it was like a carbon copy of what's his name? Fernando Alonso's famous GP2 engine radio at the exact same track like 10 years ago.
It's pretty good. I got it pulled up for us, so we'll look at that real quick.
It's unbelievable how bad our speed is on the straight, but like, it's a different category.
Dude, you already know.
You can hear his Canadian accent.
No, he was
so
like, Lance was like, it's a different category.
It's so bad.
There was a bit of finesse on that.
There was a little sass there. I can't agree with you on that. But I don't know. I mean, obviously you kind of knew this, but this is also kind of ringing to the Max Verstappen complaining about the car a few years ago. I don't know. I feel like that's just, you're not in a position to be, you know, even making points. You're 7 seconds behind Yuki at lap 48. So it's not like it matters. Maybe
you're
if
in
this,
P12.
Let's say if this comm happened at like lap 23, it might have meant a little bit more, but I don't know. That's just kind of how it is. Moving on, we got our reoccurring famous segments that everyone loves so much. We got not five or top five.
Top five or not five.
Oh. All right, we're going to go rapid fire, alternating. Go.
Max Verstappen's bounce back and Penelope's first time seeing her dad win a race.
Shout out, Dad. A lot of first lap action. Always exciting to watch right as the lights go out, some crash.
I was going to say, it's when the pack's closest together. Then you had, obviously, the superior performance of the undercut at Suzuka.
Absolute stunner. Got Leclerc's change.
Leclerc's charge through the field was absolutely gorgeous, going from P8 to P4. Earned my driver of the day, earned the fans' driver of the day.
One-stop strategy absolutely killed it. 28 laps on mediums coming on to another hards.
Best point of the weekend for me, though, Yuki Tsunoda scoring points at his home race.
Absolute home dog. So happy for him. Going over to not five, we got Albon, Ricciardo incident. That's just how it happens.
A racing incident, but it's not fun to see drivers crash all the
Absolutely
time.
Absolutely not.
Then you got Williams management of their chassis. When is this going to be fixed? Hopefully after the Miami GP.
Maybe. You have Sauber still sucking at the game Pit Change Simulator. Get it together.
We had another instance of them just sitting with Guan Yu Zhou in the pit lane for like 6 seconds changing a tire, dude. And then you've got...
We didn't finish before the song.
Hey, we'll get better at it. We'll do it
one day.
Then you've got just Ram. Literally just Ram.
Just look up the crash and you'll see what we mean. Just Ram. And then lastly, you have all the missed track limits out of Spoon. I was watching that very heavily. I was calling it out.
There was a lot of...
George Russell, I'm looking at you.
there was a lot of... So Spoon is like a double apex corner. It really reminds me of Turkey, the quad apex corner in Turkey. But it's a double apex corner, and it's very difficult, if you've actually driven it, to stay within track limits on the exit of the second apex of the corner. So the true exit of the corner. Because you're trying to run as wide as you possibly can on it, and it sucks.
Yeah, going over, no F2 race this weekend. When is the next F2 race, do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't. I believe it's once we go to Europe, so I believe it might be Monaco.
I know that the women of Formula One Academy are racing in May. I don't know if they're racing in April, though. So
I believe they're racing at Miami.
Yes, that's the one that I know that they're racing at. You have no rally news. It just happened last week. Calm down. WEC, Imola, April 21st, 6 a.m.
We're almost there.
So close. 2 weeks, baby. 2 weeks.
Nothing going on with IndyCar either.
And then you got MotoGP, which I woke up yesterday and was like, okay, you know, is there MotoGP today? Like there usually is. And kind of was shocked at what I saw. There was supposed to be a race. And apparently, the Argentinian Grand Prix is canceled because of Argentinian President Javier Milei. I butchered that.
Probably
I know
just
that.
Malay.
Decided to cut the amount of government funding and pulled the plug on the race as it was one of the highest government funded activities for Argentina. Which kind of sucks. This was one of those races that hadn't been really put on. It's been put on once in the last 4 years because of COVID.
I would actually like. I want to, obviously, once we're done, I'm going to take a look at the circuit itself. Because I know there's a couple really cool racetracks in Argentina. So I'd like to see where they're actually racing at. Or I guess where they were supposed to.
Which exact one, yeah. Forcing them to cancel that this week. So next week is going to be one in the U.S. So for us American fans, that means a nice 5 o'clock start.
Yeah, a nice actual midday start.
I will be working, sadly, but... That's just how it is. I will definitely catch the highlights that night, though. Kind of sticking with that, though, this was something that Oliver and I were talking a lot about off air just around the week. Just the idea of, like, tracks that never happened that were kind of announced.
Oh, yeah.
Vietnam was, like, I had never heard about this. Apparently in 2020, they were supposed to be racing at Vietnam.
This is always a very cool point.
And it's a very cool track if you look it up. It looks like it would have been one of the longer straights on the grid and on the tracks.
It was, so yeah, this is just history lesson of the day. But yeah, so Vietnam was scheduled to have its inaugural race in the 2020 season. It was supposed to be round four of the 2020 season. And... There was a lot of government funding and stuff that went into it, corruption that went into it. But with all the COVID stuff that happened, I think the race was originally supposed to be held in April. But with COVID and stuff, you know, the season start got pushed back to essentially the 4th of July. So I was up north with my family, watching the Austrian GP as the first race of the season in July. But it was one of the coolest tracks. It looked very weird when it comes to a track map. Because like Raven was saying, it would have had the longest straight in modern Formula One, but it had, to me, like a very Baku mixed with, to me, Coda track layout. The third sector of this track was absolutely gorgeous. It was kind of like the Suzuka S's and the Coda S's having a baby with the Baku GP. Like it was just very, very interesting. But it's probably my It's probably like my favorite F1 track to have never happened. If I'm actually looking at circuits. Oh, and then we had, funny enough, we speaking about tracks that not didn't happen, but just tracks. We had the track that got built for that Japanese billionaire by Herman Tilke.
This, I mean, it looks stunning. I mean, you get a F1 designer to build a custom track, it's going to be heat. But the specific, like, Sector 3, I guess you want to call it, Sector 2, I don't know. It's, like, kind of like Jeddah's almost, where it's, like, starts off kind of soft and then kind of gets harder and wavier and then comes down to a straight.
And then it has, like, a super long straight that has, like, a hairpin very much like Vietnam was going to have, where it's kind of like a circular hairpin that goes all the way back around. It was a cool looking track. Like if I had all that money, that's what I'd be doing. Some guy is actually living out my dream right now. He probably has a 1980s McLaren MP4 in his garage as well.
Ferrari F40.
Yeah. Oh, Ferrari F40. Oh my goodness.
You know it. I mean,
I do. It's the greatest road car ever created, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So that kind of wraps it up for us. I mean, not much else happening.
You know what else is happening? Some good sleep after we're done
absolutely.
Recording this tonight.
We are a little tired boys today. I don't know if you've seen us yawning on the camera, but
I was supposed to get on a plane at 5:30 tomorrow morning to go to New Orleans, but that trip unfortunately got canceled, so I get to sleep in, and now I have a bunch of time off of work.
Lucky, I have school every day this week.
Wait, do you have a button on there that says, like, keep crying, man?
I have the echo button, which I love.
Yeah, that works for me.
I think that's going to be it for us, though. We will definitely be back here next week.
We'll definitely see you next week.
No race next week. We got China in 2 weeks.
Japan,
or not, Miami after that. Is that 1 week or two weeks?
So we got
2 weeks kind of in between the next three or four races, I want to say.
I was going to say, 2 week gap for China, 2 week gap for Miami, 2 week gap for Imola, and then the Imola Monaco race weekends will be a doubleheader. So we're almost there.
We're almost there.
It will be consistent, like rapid fire racing.
There's a lot of traveling happening for these teams right now. You know, you got to go to China, then you got to go all the way back to America. So
once we get into that European tour stage of the year, you'll be having races almost every single week.
It's going to be great. So until then, we will see you guys next time. Have a good one. Go check us out. You know, subscribe right here, like right here, rate 5 stars wherever you're listening. Check us out wherever
you
find us.
Right here.
Later, everyone.
Catch you guys.